This episode of The Occasional is brought to you by the LSA Group, the new high-end, high-value speaker standard, and also Core Power, state-of-the-art power at real-world prices.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. Precursor to our big Munich wrap-up, we have a very special guest, Maurice Young and Amico from the show, The Home Entertainment Show. Now of Long Beach. Used to be down in the OC, though. How are you guys doing today? Thanks so much for coming out.
Great. Thanks for having us here. Really appreciate it.
So the show is at a new venue this year. Going to be at the Long Beach Hilton, the Hilton Long Beach, the Hilton LBs. You were down near the OC for a couple of years, but actually, Brian Beasley and I were both at the show last year, and we had a wonderful time.
It was my first time. I really enjoyed it.
Glad to hear it.
So you have a new venue this year, and what kind of went into the decision-making and why you guys changed venues?
Really opportunity. Where we were at in the OC, we could only grow so far, and we had a lot of major vendors and smaller vendors, too, that were looking for larger rooms and more opportunity to be able to expand. And we looked around, and the best location I could find was there in Long Beach. And we dealt with the Hilton once before, and they're a business-orientated, basically, company that understands business and really respects trade shows. A lot of hotels don't like trade shows, you know, especially this one when you start pulling furniture out and you're putting in speakers
in
there.
True. Yeah.
There is a level of panic and stress that you see in the employees that just goes way past the Geiger counter. So, you know, the Hilton was used to this. They loved it, the idea. We brought some of our top exhibitors, and they looked at it and they just fell in love with it. And there's just a lot of room for us to grow for the next, you know, couple of years. Long Beach also offered us the opportunity of airline travel. We've got Long Beach Airport that's like 10 minutes away. Mm-hmm. We've got LAX on a really good day. You're there in 25 minutes. So we've got international and national opportunities for people to come to. The local area is vibrant. You know, it doesn't die at 8 o'clock at night. We kind of ran into that at the Irvine section where there was like nothing going on. So, you know, we wanted some energy, and there's a good youthful mix of people in the Long Beach area. We really wanted a really good mix and forward thinking into the future is what we're looking for. The show's been in business for 20 years, and I want it to continue for another 20 years past me.
Yeah, and playing off the Amico, what are some of the differences that you're going to see from the show this year, you think?
This year, last year was my first year I was brought on to be the director. Well, I was brought on as the social media guru and as sort of the host for the show. And then I got made the director of marketing and social media relations. And so coming from a music background myself, this year what we've worked really hard to do is to bridge what is realistically a gap for some people between music creators and music listeners, aka audiophiles, right? So we're getting much more community-minded. We're getting much more human-minded. You're going to see a lot of different things in terms of the concert that we're doing. We're doing a live two-track reel-to-reel recording that's going to be engineered by a Grammy award-winning multi-platinum producer this year at the show. We have a documentary. We've been doing monthly events with a lot of our community partners, dealers, exhibitors, X Marks the Spot at Capitol Studios, which you guys were at. So we're taking this from an annual, you know, once annual event to being something that's in your face, in the front burners of your mind all the time. Because every time you listen to music, you should be listening to music in the best possible environment. And if we can help bring that to you, we're going to do it.
That's awesome. I mean, one of the things, and obviously something different is happening in the studio today. You talked a little bit about this documentary, and there's an entire film crew in here videotaping us.
Of course.
Tell us a little bit about this documentary.
Well, just a short note. You've signed all your rights away.
Of course.
All right.
0% of zero is still zero. So right. Enjoy.
It's a zero sum game. Let's recall that.
That's good. Right. So funnily enough, the whole thing started because of the show. Last year when I was doing all the video hosting, I was running around in 4-inch heels for like 12 hours a day, and I was sitting down in the lounge of the hotel, kind of curled up in the corner, resting my feet, and this guy wanders over to me and he goes, "Hey, I want to talk to you for a minute." And I don't know, audiophile from creepy guy, from regular nice guy, right, from whatever. So I sort of went, okay. And he looked like a nice enough guy. So he sat down and he said, "Look, I'm kind of wanting to do this podcast, and I know you're really good at hosting and this, and then I was wondering if I could talk to you about it. And so we had a nice little chat about it. And the more and more he talked to me about what he wanted to do. I have these buddies down in Carlsbad in San Diego. One of my buddies was one of the photographers to last photograph Jimi Hendrix alive. And all of this incredible history that we're never going to have again. And I said, this is not a podcast. This is a web series. And then we got a crew together and I went to Maurice. I said, hey, what do you think? I know this is a departure from what you guys are doing. And Maurice being unbelievably forward thinking, which I think is why the show has such incredible staying power and such incredible support through everything, is that he goes, do it. Like there was no discussion. There was no, how much is it going to cost? It was just do it, make it happen. Because he understood immediately, we're going to tell the story, right? And we're going to let other people tell their own stories. And so it started off as this web series that then became a tiny little, like a mini doc. And now it's turning into this thing where we have interviews with recording studios, with Grammy award-winning producers, with foreign design systems designers and memorabilia collectors, and just talking about how music has shaped their lives, how music has even saved some of their lives, and how important it is to them. And we're talking to the new generation, because there's a huge vinyl resurgence and even the lo-fi resurgence that's happening, which is ironic for us being in, you know, high-end audio. But the fact that people are going for this and they're understanding how important music is to them and how they're listening and receiving and experiencing the music. And so we want to bridge that gap. And this documentary is doing that. And we're going to be premiering the global premiere.
We got some breaking news.
This is something that we waited to share with you guys because we were thinking, well, we'll do a press release. I thought, no, let's put it on the podcast first. So for anybody that has a ticket to the show, whether it's a Friday pass or a 3-day pass or 2-day pass, whatever, we're going to be doing the world premiere of the new documentary short Friday night at The Cocktail Party, where we're also having our signature wines called The Show Wines brought in courtesy of Beeler Family Wines.
Oh, I love it.
So it's going to be great. We're going to have THE Wines with THE Documentary and THE Humans from the human side.
And every street in Los Angeles will start with THE.
Well, the freeways,
we do want to be clear on that. Everything will be THE.
I think it should be.
People will be embedded into their brains.
Yes.
Turn into an episode of The Californians from SNL.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's very exciting. Marisa, you'd said something about, the move is going to make the show capable to grow. Can you tell us a little bit about your goals and what you see for like the next few years, next 5 years, what we're going to be able to do in Long Beach?
In Long Beach in the next 5 years, I know by next year we'll double the show again. And then after that, we hope to increase it 10 to 15 to 20%. Per year.
Well, keeping in mind, we've already, more than doubled this year. Yeah. From
is
last
that right?
Year.
Yeah.
I like to be conservative. I like to be conservative because then this way, it went past that point that we originally said. And I like to keep it that way. This way, it's better also for you guys to say, well, there was supposed to be only 50 rooms, but there's 70 rooms, And that's what I like to do. And, she is correct. It is more than double that.
We're on track to triple, almost, it, I think.
So, wow. And yeah. What I'm really looking to do in the future is to bring more of the international in. We've got some, but we're going to get a lot of Europe in. We're going to get some of the Japanese back in for next year. They're very conservative, but they've already sent me emails and said, look, we can't make it this year, but we will next year because we'll announce next year's dates this year. And then also we've had some contacts with some people in China that make some very high-end, high-quality products that want to come. And so we're looking forward to the future. We really are. And especially being in Southern California, which I think is the world's largest market, but it hasn't been tapped yet.
Right. There's always been kind of a bit of drama in the Los Angeles area when it comes to audio shows. But have you guys signed on with the Long Beach, in the Long Beach area, for the Long Beach Hilton for the next couple of years? Like, will it be there next year? Or are you going to keep moving?
No, we're gonna stay there until we get to a point where we get a saturation point with that hotel, because it only has 500 rooms.
Yeah.
To where we might have to do multiple hotels, which is not a big deal. Munich does that, so they do a very good job of what they do. Look, I'm glad people have been buying tickets left and right. We're like twice what we did last year at this time.
Already,
and we got more and more people will turn around and do so. And we want people to keep coming back because we want them to realize it's not going to be the same show as it was last year. And the show next year is going to be a little bit different with some additional companies and exhibits and styles and panels and education seminars that we're going to do. So, you know, look forward to the idea that every year we're going to change something different. And the best part is we're not just strictly for trade. We're also a consumer orientated show. So if you want to buy something there, you can definitely turn around and buy it there or put your order in.
Yeah. Cool. I think for me, it's just I got thrown into this whole thing just as last year was happening on sort of short notice. And so for me, I would say a huge thank you to everybody that has continued to support the show and who have been, I hate to use the word brave or courageous because it's high-end audio, but who have been brave enough to step out of the comfort zone of how things have always been and say, oh, no, we're going to go into a new frontier, into a new territory with them. And just remember, for the listeners who are traditionalists, we're going to have that stuff too. We're not excluding traditional style audiophiles at all.
No.
We're just bringing in other things to go with it so that everybody can see new stuff. And I think we're going to have something for everybody, right? You're not going to walk into every single room and go, oh my God, that was amazing. We're not going to try to please all the people all the time because that's a waste of time. But we do know we're going to have something for everyone and you're going to love what you find there. And it's going to be a blast this year.
So this is the show June 7th through 9th at the Hilton Long Beach, right?
Yep. Correct.
What's the website?
TheHomeEntertainmentShow.com. Get your tickets now.
Do it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for coming. Thank you for joining me and part-time audiophile, editor, head honcho, creator, founder, Scott Hall. So you have tuned in to our wrap-up report, our summary, our top 10 list for perhaps, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Scott, the biggest audio show on the planet, the Munich high-end audio show in Germany. It's quite a thing, and Scott and the team at Part-Time Audiophile were there to capture all the goods. Before we jump straight into it, I wanted to kind of say, Scott, what happened on your journey on the way to the show? Please tell.
Well, I mean, not a lot. I mean, I try to do what normal people do, which is save some money. And that's usually a great way to completely FUBAR an entire adventure. I listened to a friend of ours, Dr. Panagiotis Karavitis, who gave me some advice on how to do some travel from the United States to Europe. And he gave me a very reasonable suggestion, which is find a hub city that sits between and fly to that hub. Break your trip at the hub, spend a day or so there, dump your jet lag, and then fly from that hub to anywhere in Europe. And it turns out that when you do that, interesting things happen. I mean, a direct flight for me from DC to Munich would have cost me $1,600, which is not cheap. I could have done a multi-stop kind of thing, but you know, it just seemed like a lot of hassle. But when I started looking into the price difference, right, I would save a little bit here and a little bit there. But not enough to make you go, oh my God, this is totally a better way to do this. So what I did instead was I actually booked two separate flights, one to England through London and another one from London to Munich. And by doing that, I mean, I saved like more than half and it was magic. Two flights completely disconnected. Brexit is apparently doing amazing things for travel incentives. So anybody who is listening to this, totally hop on that and get to London as quickly as you can. So I did that. So I end up in London. I'm completely FUBAR'd, right? Completely lost to jet lag. And I'm wandering around trying to figure out what I'm going to do, get to my hotel, stare at the wall, drink like 15 cups of coffee, because I know that if I go to sleep, I'm dead, right? Just it screws up everything. You need to stay up as long as you possibly can and then go to sleep when the locals go to sleep and then wake up the next day and you'll be relatively okay. Makes sense. So I do all of that. I spend my whole day awake. I go downtown. I go down to Westminster Abbey. I see Buckingham Palace. I see Big Ben under a ton of scaffolding. I get rained on. I go to a pub. I do the stuff, right? And I have a good time. And then I go back to my hotel. I completely faceplant, emerge from a coma like 10 hours later, get to the airport on time to fly because, you know, I'm being responsible, which is completely unlike me. And I'm sitting there at the gate and the agent's looking at me going, oh. And you sit there and you have that sense that something is about to go horribly wrong when they're looking at your papers and they're saying, oh. And then they said, oh. Oh. And sir, I'm really sorry to say, but you can't fly on this passport. And this is when I learned that you need to have a certain amount of time on your passport before you're allowed entry into certain countries, like the EU. You need 3 months on your U.S. passport or really any passport before they'll let you in. Okay, fine. So I have this perfectly valid passport, except I can't use it to travel. Yeah, that's just how that works. So I'm sitting there looking at her going, you know, I'm in London. So what am I doing? Am I going to go home? Am I stuck? Well, what's the deal? And she said, well, look, you can do two things. You can spend your time because your return flight to DC, I'm seeing, isn't until Monday. So you can spend the next few days here in England. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, that actually doesn't sound too horrible. Or, she said, you can turn right around and you can go home and fix your passport. And I said, that sounds pretty awful. Going to D.C. And fixing your passport, dealing with the State Department. I highly recommend root canal first. But it's just there's nothing about going to the State Department, which is appealing to a resident of D.C. She did say there may be a third option. Have you tried the U.S. Embassy here in London? And so this is what I ended up doing. She printed off like Google Maps directions, and it's like an hour and a half on the tube. Anyway, I'm hoofing it into the U.S. Embassy. I get there, right? It's like a fortress. To get into it, you have to get rid of your bags. You can't bring your bags into the embassy. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, really? this is interesting, right? Good security. So where do you recommend I take them? Well, there's a coffee shop across the street for check your bag at the coffee shop. These are words I never thought I would ever hear anyone say. So I go to the coffee house, and for £10, I'm able to leave whatever I want there, kind of like a bellhop stand, and they'll give me a cup of coffee. So I took I left my stuff, grabbed my coffee, and went into the U.S. Embassy. And I kid you not, within like 45 minutes, I had a brand new passport. It was like clockwork.
It was that fast?
It was unbelievable. It was, in fact, the best experience with the U.S. government I've ever had. So quick, so efficient, so kind. And I think at this point I should mention that at no point did I actually speak to an American. They were all English. Everyone I met was English. Even the guys with the giant guns that were like outside of the embassy, they were all English. So anyways, I got my new passport. I'm feeling pretty good. I got an hour and a half ride back to the airport. The ticketing agent, the gate agent said, dude, just show up. We will put you on whatever flight we can. We will get you to Germany today. It's not going to be a big deal. Assuming you can get here, you're going to go.
So let me just say this. You got the whole thing. You got a new passport and everything taken care of in a single day, and you were back on a plane. Did you end up back on the plane after that?
I did.
In a single day?
Yeah, no problem. I mean, I didn't make the, because it's 1 hour behind Munich time zone. So it's a like a 2 hour flight plus the extra hour. I ended up getting into Munich, I think landing around 5:30, 6 o'clock. And then up to the show thereafter. So I missed the entire trade day, one day of a 4-day show, but that's all I missed, right? I would have been there if all things had gone well, I would have been there at noon, but I got there just a few hours later. Yeah, it was remarkable. Just a little bit of a little bit of blood, only one kidney, and I was on my way.
Tell me first impressions. You land there. Have you been to the show before? Or was this your first time?
No, this is not my first time. So I kind of knew what I was in for. And for anybody who's ever gone to a high-end audio show in North America, Munich is different, right? You get off the plane, and the first thing that you are kind of clued into that something's happening in this town, which is a decent-sized town, right? It's not like some podunk, like a village, right? It's a serious industrial town. You're coming off your boarding gate, and you're walking to like baggage claim or wherever, and you start seeing signs in the airport, right? Where to go to pick up a shuttle, that there's a high-end audio show. It's at this place at this time during these days, and you can go get your badge here. You can go do this there. Go this way to go ahead and meet the free shuttle bus.
So is it like the biggest thing in Munich during that time period?
I can't tell you, but it was nuts.
It's really funny to me because when an audio show is in a city in the U.S., it's not only is it never the biggest thing in that city, there's usually like some other weird convention that's bigger at the same time.
Right, right. Like the restaurant convention or the porn convention or the high-heeled shoe convention, right? Something else is happening.
Or the brony convention.
There was nothing else that I really saw. Of course, I was kind of, just amazed and dazed. That said, what I did see was stuff for high-end everywhere. I mean, the big banners, signs on the side of the road. They had a bus from the airport. How nice was this? It's a big old shuttle bus. And for those of us that have gone to a lot of shows, you're sitting there thinking to yourself, hey, that sounds really nice. It is nice. It's just a nice little thought that the show producers kind of threw out there for us. So you felt cared for the entire way. And there was this sense that the entire town was at least vaguely aware that something was happening because of the signage, right? And you show up at the MOC, which is this, it's a convention center. So it's big, right? It's got that kind of Las Vegas convention center type style to it. You drive up. There's signs all along the road from all kinds of high-end vendors. There are lots of people milling about. There's this giant white ball with big blue letters across it that says high-end. You feel like you're in a carnival, right? It's just lovely. It feels really different, like you're doing something special. And then you walk into the show itself, and it's a zoo. The numbers that they published from the show this year said something along the lines of over 20,000 people went to the audio show that weekend. 20,000. And there were hundreds and hundreds of high-end vendors demoing their stuff there. I had this moment where I kind of was reaching for a calculator and thinking, if you took all of the high-end audio shows in North America, they'd be about the same size as Munich. All of them together, right? Munich is just that much bigger. If you've been to a high-end audio show, it's not like that. If you've been to CES, it's actually quite a lot like that, except everything is audio.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that I have not been there myself, but I hear and I've read a lot about, what is the room listening situation like? Because I have a mixed vision of what I hear and I read. Sometimes I feel like I see photos of just like, like cubicles or like dividers in between rooms.
Yeah.
And then I see some hallways every once in a while. So is it a mix of that, or what is exactly the listening situation like at the show?
So if I'm remembering right, there's like four halls that are CES, like gigantic shared spaces with like pathways through and booths that can be cut up any number of ways, and people can create little meeting rooms or listening rooms or demos or whatever it is that they want out of that space. And I'm sure they pay for all of that through the nose. And then above that, like the second floor, right, there is a set of two atriums. And these atriums are two floors, so there's three total floors to the show. The second and third floor rooms are more rooms, so it's a lot like the North American audio show, except there's a lot more glass. The problem with all of these rooms is they're sonically compromised in ways that most high-end audio shows, the larger rooms in high-end audio shows, are compromised. But more, right? I mean, it's almost a maxim that great sound at high-end is really hard. You go to Expona, when we went to Expona, there was a lot of rooms that sounded way better than good, right? A lot of stuff that was just, wow, that's really fantastic. At high-end, that was rarer, and it was almost beside the point. Yeah, high-end sound would be great, and we'd love to show off our product, but it wasn't some kind of, you know, magic pissing contest where every vendor was trying to outdo every other vendor. It was this kind of threefold thing. They were showing to consumers, absolutely, but they were also trying to convince dealers and distributors that their products were worth picking up, that there was something new to talk about. So there was that kind of B2B element, not just that B2C. Mm-hmm. And of course, there was a ton of press, like hundreds and hundreds of high-end destinations, whether in print or audio like this or web-based, all over the world, really, was fully represented. And stuff that, you know, I had never seen before. Lots of localized trade magazines and trade outlets. Stuff in from Korea, from Japan, from China, from Malaysia, from Africa. It was everywhere. It was very cosmopolitan in a way that I have never really seen at any other show. Anyway, so you were asking about the rooms. So the rooms were a mess, right? Some of them were really, really good. Some of them were really, really not. And it was really in pure audio form difficult to tell, you know, what the problem was when the room wasn't awesome and what to credit when the room was really awesome. There were some rooms that sounded amazing, yeah. Right? And some rooms that sounded really not amazing.
Yeah, and you bring up an interesting point because I've, you know, been reading some stuff about this online this week as well, and that it's really hard to give credit where credit is due in these situations. It's not that everything sounds really good or really bad. It's like you're trying to, in a way, discern what is giving the good vibes or what is bringing this system down. And it's just not a practical situation for a review setting.
No.
Like if you want to really know how the preamp sounds, you got to isolate that variable in an environment you're used to. So for a lot of people who say, what does it sound like? What's really good? You take everything with a grain of salt because not everything is going to be able to have complete control over. But there is some, you know, obviously some stuff does sound good, but if you don't hear something mentioned here, you know, that doesn't mean that company's not great as well. It's just a lot of things go into, you know, the final outcome.
It's true. If we don't mention it, it's terrible. No, the point of a high-end audio show is that it really is impossible to say what caused what. There's no causality argument you can make and have it, you know, true with a straight face.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people who walked into a lot of these rooms and said, you know, I'm familiar with this and I'm familiar with that. Therefore, what I must be hearing that's different is this. And that's an argument that you can make. I think it's not a good argument because, again, MOC, room conditions, who knows what's happening. And this show is notorious.
All right, so let's get into the top 10 lists.
So very clearly, and top of the list, no question, no contest, no comparison, crispy pork knuckle. Who thought to eat this stuff, right? I mean, it's just this giant hunk of meat with a crispy skin wrapper on it with brown gravy served with potatoes and get a nice big old wheat beer beside that. Just phenomenal. Okay, so aside from food, all things pork. I don't know how anybody goes to the show if you are even remotely diet-oriented or possibly vegetarian. It's like you're going to go and fast for 4 days. Bavaria does not have your back if you are not a fan of the pork. Probably the biggest news from the audio show was the new Garrard. This is a new turntable based on an old turntable, the Garrard 301, 401. These are legendary direct drive turntables. This stuff has not been made in I don't know how long, decades now, but the brand was bought by SME. And they're now, looks like, bringing back these legendary direct drive turntable designs. That's really all we know. We saw a working model. We heard one in one of the rooms paired with some Spender speakers. But the turntable itself, they have no details on it. They have no idea what the price is going to be, no idea what the specs are going to be, no idea what the availability is going to be. All we do know is that they will be making them. And there will be a warranty, and that's pretty cool. So we'll hopefully hear more about what this legendary turntable from a legendary brand, also now being sold by another legendary brand, will bring. So that was something fascinating. Wanted to know more about it. Sadly, there was not a lot of details available. Okay, next thing. There was also a DAC that I thought was kind of interesting from Tidal. One of my personal favorite brands. I own their loudspeakers, reviewed some of their stuff. But this DAC, the Chimera, it's doing things different, right? It's not a digital audio converter. They actually call it a digital music converter. They're trying to not just be cute, but make a distinction that what they're doing is a little different. No oversampling, no upsampling, though it does handle all the high-end formats. They use something odd, right? What they really went for is the fact that most of our music is not high res. It's still, CD quality, whether it's streamed or coming off of a CD transport or whatever, right? This music, what they're doing with it, they're using an FPGA to do something like intermodulating, right? So that what we do with I guess it's oversampling, right? You're trying to find interstitial, right? They're trying to take up a chunk of data and make the steps between each kind of landing spots smaller, so it smooths out the digital curve. What Tidal is doing is they're doing that with 44.1, right? And the result is a smoother, more organic, more rich experience, right? It's not oversampling. It's not upsampling. It's different. And the upshot will remain to be heard. But I was really curious. I do most of my streaming on Tidal and now moving to Qobuz, seeing a lot more high-end stuff coming from that. So this will be interesting as a DAC that may sit in both spaces. Because I still have a host of CDs too, and I'd love to see what this does with a nice CD transport. So that was interesting. Brinkmann has a new direct dive turntable, the Taurus. It's a replacement for the Bardo, roughly the same price point, all updated, all upgraded, and we should be hearing more about that soon. On the extreme far end, Estolon released its brand new Forza loudspeakers. If you have to ask the price, you're not going to be able to afford it. But the elegance of these speakers is just untouched. I mean, I don't see anything like this in high-end audio. It's very elegant, kind of swoopy, kind of organic looking in a kind of, a modern art sort of way. These are speakers that collectors would have in their systems, in their homes, and not feel like you just imported a giant space penis. It's really a cool look. Maybe a little farther, a little lower on the high-end food chain, but still super high-end, is this new SIA-30 integrated amplifier from Vitas. I had the 25 here, 6-7 years ago, and I couldn't afford it. But if I had been able to afford it, I would have bought it. It was the best sounding integrated I've ever heard, and this one's better. It's the power supplies are bigger. There's more stuff in it. I can get a phone aboard, a DAC. I can get all the stuff in it, It's beautiful. It was shown here at High End in a very cool, like anodized orange. I kind of wanted it. But this is something I really want to hear because I think this may well be a killer of Solution and CH Precision and all of those other super high-end electronics providers. I just love what Hans Ole Vitas does with his sound. So I'm really excited about this integrated amp. On the other side of things, I saw a 300B amplifier from Octave Audio. It's called Jubilee. It's got three 300B tubes per side. I've never seen anything like this. Three 300B tubes per side. Total of 30 watts per channel. It's a nice spot for a tube amp to go to, especially if you're not talking about like a KT88 or KT77 kind of, or a derivative of those kind of tubes. So clearly a tone-oriented amplifier designed to kind of really bring out that organic richness sound, not the hi-fi sound, the organic sound. And it's got a whole different power supply mechanism, which is extremely difficult to explain. That said, it sounded pretty cool, and I look forward to seeing more from that. There's a lot of fans out there of the DynAudio Confidence line. This is the reference line of speakers from DynAudio. These are all new. They revised the entire line of speakers from the little stand mounts all the way up to the giant floor standers. The Confidence line has a whole new look and feel. I'm very interested to see what these sound like. Hopefully we'll get a chance to do that at some point in the future. And if I didn't mention it already, the crispy pork knuckle. Every Versthaus does it a little differently, and some of them are, this kind of gravy or that kind of gravy, this kind of a side dish or that kind of side dish. You just basically pick the color and I want a wheat beer, I want a dark beer, and that's really all you have to say, right? It's not you don't go through this like 15-page menu of American microbrews where everything is some variation of dead flour. Apparently everybody has a much higher tolerance than I do, but it's an experience. The food was definitely a highlight for me. That's what I got from High End, my friend.
From Mark Phillips.
So Mark, the top of Mark's list is probably a good place to start, right? He lifted out a room which was not unfamiliar. Von Schweikert and VAC. These two companies have been showing at a lot of different audio shows, and they've been doing something very specific at those audio shows, which is, the way I put it is, showing what's possible in high-end sound. None of this is affordable. It's not meant to be affordable. I think, and I agree with Mark here, and in fact, Lee Scoggins also agrees with us. This was clearly the best sound at the show. They went out of their way and did something special. That was his first and best of show.
Number two, Zesto Audio, Purist Audio, and Verti Audio. During a particular vexing Saturday, when I seemed to be putting out fires all day, this room was an oasis. Great music, great sound, and a relaxed and beautiful presentation. Plus, Jim Odd and George and Carolyn Kunis are wonderful and gracious company.
What comes together out of this room with the Verity speakers was just elegance. And this is kind of a signature thing for George and Carolyn specifically. They've been really, really consistent in putting together just lovely, lovely sounding rooms. So this was a great place to go.
Audio Note?
Yeah.
Condo.
Audio Note UK and Audio Note Japan are two separate companies, but once upon a time they were not. So Condo is the Audio Note Japan, if you will, but they're just, it's totally separate now. I'm running out of words, right? Mark uses the word unobtainium, and right.
Is the word you're looking for unobtainium?
Yeah. It's interesting that he uses that because none of this is cheap. In fact, it's so far from cheap, it's not even close. But that's really not the point. Hand wound by living craftsmen, like little beautiful watches or handmade jewelry. It's the kind of stuff that you get from Condo. And Condo had so much gear in this room, from my 10, 15 years doing this. This is the only time I ever get to see this much condo gear. And these beautiful tubes with these really unusual parts, these really highly audiophile, very rare, totally unobtainium parts, all stuck into this electronics. And there was some mixed reviews about the speakers. Sometimes some people said that the sound was really good. Some people said it was really, really kind of weird. Some people said it was most luscious that they've ever heard. So anyway, it was divisive. But I just love their stuff. If you ever get into high-end audio for the artistic factor, right, and you're really kind of driven by the storytelling aspect of high-end audio, that this came from, you know, a certain pedigree and certain lineage and a certain provenance, and you're really worried about who did what and when and what are all your parts came from, then these are the brands you should be looking for, and they're really fascinating.
Well, you know, the Condo actually comes up in his number four as well.
It does.
Living Voice and Condo. The new entry-level Living Voice Avatar A25 anniversary speakers, $5K a pair, take the Outstanding Value Award at High End 2019. These small 2.5-way floor centers completely energized the rather large room and wowed everyone who listened. I want these to review STAT, period.
Yeah, I agree.
They also, next, Joseph Audio also had, you know, we spoke about him from Expona as well, the new Graphene edition, his update, I think it's Rev.2. I'm not really sure where they fit. Do you know if the other ones are going away? Did you hear any rumors on that?
Good question. I believe that these are replacements, and I'm sure Jeff...
Yeah, I would say they are from the vibe I picked up, too. Yeah, so he showed with Purist Audio and Olexity. He's saying, my favorite Sane Lounge speakers, the Joseph Audio Perspectives, which are the floor standards, the Pulsars are the bookshelves, are now the second generation, and their new graphene drivers are pre-designed from beginning to end. And yeah, I've heard his old ones sound really good, so I'm just excited to see how much better he can do on this one.
Yeah, so this is the second outing for these new version 2 speakers. What Joseph Audio tends to get dinged on is stuff that's not relevant. Right. It's I wish this was cheaper. You know, I wish a Porsche. Yeah. I wish a Porsche was cheaper. Right. I wish the Lotto Fairy called me. I wish a lot of things. That said, before what he's asking for these speakers, and I think they're under 15 grand now for these floor standards. You get one of the most linear speakers that has ever been made. I haven't seen Joseph Audio kind of do a lot with solid state. So Alexity is a solid state brand. It's a, if you will, it's a related company to Vitus Audio, one of my favorite all-time high-end brands. And this was a great showing, right? Purist Audio wired everything up. And the sound in here was remarkably good. Jeff Joseph is a wizard. Not only creates good speakers, but he manages to coax great sound out of them, even in rooms that suck. So this was really, really good, and I was happy to see it.
Moving on to Dr. K, part-time audiophile writer. Amplifiers the size of coffins. Is this a thing? The answer is yes. After D'Agostino made his relentless pretty much everyone else, came with a long, a meter-long power amp. I could name almost a few of the most ridiculous ones from Playback Design, Aries Carat, MSB, CH Precision, and the latest VAC integrated is more than 3 feet tall. It is true. If you've ever seen the Relentless from Dan D'Agostino, it's a massive, really, really heavy piece. And, you know, it's one direction to go. The bass is tighter and the highs are airier.
Yeah.
The bass has been getting more firm by the year and so many years in a row that it now has constipation. That's fucking hilarious. Oh, my God. I didn't read that the first time I read this.
Yeah.
The bass has been getting more firm by year. So many years in a row that it now has constipation. Upper extension and airiness has reached stratospheric levels. Maybe the industry should evolve a bit. Aren't they sick and tired of repeating themselves? Now, I do have a comment for this. I will say that occasionally when you go to the audio shows, there is a lot of treble to be had because, unfortunately, a lot in the U.S., a lot of the older gentlemen and the highs, they lose their hearing. So a balanced sound to the market that they're going to isn't a balanced sound to the general population. That is kind of a thing. You don't run into it all too often, but occasionally people be like, the sound was amazing in there, and this treble will just be killing me. But, you know, it's just part of the thing. The bass getting tighter and tighter. I don't think we need a laxative quite yet. I always really, really love a tight bass. So the better you can get in that round, the better. I mean, don't anybody loosen up there.
Part of what's happening with amplifier design, I think, and just me hazarding a guess, there's two things. One is that there is this marketing push that says bigger is always better. And that's just a thing. Doesn't matter what it is, make it bigger. The other thing is that there are actual designs coming out that are overbuilding the power supply. So the sheer physics of it means that, you know, you need really, really big heat sinks to deal with Class A heat dissipation, and you need a massive power supply to be able to provide the current necessary when you hit whatever, you know, whatever note you have on that speaker, which dips, you know, into the negative ohm range or something ridiculous, right? So we have this kind of he said, she said, this kind of one-upsmanship, if you will, between speaker designers making crazy speakers and amplifier designers trying to make those speakers work the way they were designed. And there really is only one direction to go at this point. That said, I will go back to that first comment. There are people out there who have looked at some of these amplifiers and said they're just not big enough. You need to make it bigger. And if you made it bigger, I would buy it. And now I think we're seeing the fruits of these comments.
I mean, they look awesome, though. It's a conversation starter for sure. If you walked into somebody's room and you saw the visceral size that these guys are doing, you'd be like, dude, what is going on here? Let's listen to that.
I will say, however, that I agree with Dr. K. There's something about the treble that's going nuts. We have this discussion between high-end sound as being hi-fi or kind of romantic, if you will, this kind of tube sound, this kind of lush sound. I really think that the lines are getting much sharper these days. I don't love it, but it is a trend. And it does not seem to be abating.
Silbatone has always been very good. This year it was close to perfect. That power amp producing maybe an entire watt was magnificent. Designed around the vacuum tube N2 and paired with those field coil speakers, made several fancy million-dollar systems sound so pedestrian.
This is stuff that is culled and cultivated and captured and brought forward from like some kind of time machine, right? From 1920s and 30s and 40s. These speakers that they were using, these ancient Western Electric horn speakers, were being mated to these brand new amplifiers and preamplifiers and stuff that are built custom around certain tubes. I've never seen a more audiophile room. They come in, they're all hushed, everybody's a little excited. You have this sense that you've walked into a toy shop, right? This kind of really, really incredibly rare electronics and componentry and history. It is the coolest thing at high end, and I go every year to pay my respects at the altar of high end awesomeness. It's amazing.
Pay my respects. Dr. K's number four is actually something I've heard and noticed. If you're one of those guys that's like a one-upmanship and you really want to be cool, vinyl is no longer cool. You want to show off your analog nerdiness? You need to go reel to reel, baby. Tapes are so back. Yeah. Even if there is little to nothing to play.
Yeah.
But not even takes will get you guys laid. So may I suggest a hand-cranked gramophone? I will say this, and I think I mentioned another podcast, at the big collector store here in LA, Amoeba Records, there is actually a very dusty box of reel-to-reel stuff sitting in the corner of that thing. And you go there, and I don't even know what's in the box. But if you're really cool and you're really hip, you get this stuff, you know, only like one or two generations original from the actual tapes, which is incredibly rare and also incredibly expensive. But let's just say if you have like a daughter of a master recording buried somewhere in your reel-to-reel, you are a living god.
It's weird, man.
Just saying.
It's weird. I mean, it's tape has come back from kind of nowhere, and open reel tape is fascinating. You know, we listened to it up in the Niagara Room. Joseph Audio has it. Greg Barone of United Home Audio has been making a whole bunch of machines. I own one. I think it's ridiculously good. I mean, I've said this to Michael Fremer, the analog guru of Stereophile, and said, you know, I honestly think it's easier to get into analog than it is to get into vinyl, in a sense that to get really good sound, it's not that hard, right, to get good sound out of an analog rig. But to get the most incredible sound, you need to go considerably far down the analog rabbit hole to get yourself to the pinnacle, right, that top 10%. But you can get there faster with open reel. I believe that. And part of that isn't just the fact that the open reel machines are good or bad or better or worse. That's not it. It's the quality of the source material. It's just better. There's a lot of really terrible vinyl out there. And there's also, there is some really good vinyl, but the quality of tape, generally speaking, is just better, just generally better.
If you end up there, you've already taken the time to make sure. There's a filter applied to rarity and the amount of time and energy that it takes that kind of weeds out a lot of the other. Because let's face it, you can buy vinyl right now at Urban Outfitters.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can. So. Most new bands or current bands are, you know, like, you know, Portugal the Man, right? Lovely the Band. Pop stuff, right? They're all releasing on vinyl. Is it any better? Probably not. I'm sure it's probably recorded and mixed on digital.
That album is good sounding, though. The Portugal the Man, though, I've heard that one. That is good sounding. That's a good point. But that one does sounds pretty good, in my opinion.
Oh, sure it does, right? But, you know, the point of it is that... you can find good reel-to-reel music. It is rare, right? You are going to spend $200 or $300 or more per album. So you have this sense, do I really need five copies of Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, right? Do I really need that? So that fifth copy, that $500 or $700 copy? Well, if you have to ask, you're clearly not that guy, right? But it's just fun, right? There's something about the ritual of analog, whether it's tape or vinyl, that appeals. And if it appeals to you, then I'm not going to need to convince you. And if it doesn't appeal to you, then there's nothing I'm going to be able to say to convince you. I am kind of omnivorous with respect to the source material, as long as it's good. And I listen to just about everything.
I'll take good hi-fi any way it comes. I'm not partial to any.
Yeah,
look, I've said this before, and I'll say it one more time. It's not just the format that makes the difference. Yeah. Everything makes a difference. Lay it down onto that final format that you listen to, there's a lot of steps in between. So as long as all those things are aligned, as long as the stars align for that recording, it could be good.
The steps from analog tape to what I hear tend to be shorter than the steps from shorter and better, right? More is preserved than the steps I see or hear when I buy something off of iTunes. But that's just me. Lee Scoggins, one of our writers, also went to the show, and his list of his favorite things kind of goes as follows. He starts off the list with VAC and Von Schweikert. He sets them out as clearly his best of show. They did some really amazing things. He also really liked DCS and the Wilson-Sasha pairing. That's something familiar to him, but he's a big DCS fan, and the new Bartok really seems to be getting him excited. We'll be following up with Bartok sometime very soon. He also called out the new speakers from ELAC. We're going to have to wait and see what he has to say about that. That article is coming. Audio Research has a brand new stereo amplifier, the Reference 130, right? It's the cool KT-150 tubes, but it's got that see-through panel with the view meter that kind of bounces around on it. Very cool aesthetic. New amplifier from Audio Research. He also said that the Mr. Speakers Voce and paired with the Blue Hawaii was the best headphone rig he heard. heard. He did also mention the DCS Bar Talk as another cool hi-fi experience available at Munich. There was an entire room that DCS had on the floor of the hall where you could walk in. It was the ceiling and walls and whatnot, and little tables that were set out, and say, like, I don't know, 10, 20 Bar Talks with a bunch of different headphones. And you could sit there and listen to music on that too. The most unusual pairing he heard, Goeble speakers and Engstrom amplifiers. These are European brands. Don't see a whole lot of them in the United States. We have seen them a couple times at some audio shows. Lee went and checked those out and gave those definitely big thumbs up. One of his top three rooms.
I actually have a very special bonus. A bonus top five for you guys, straight from Eric Shook. He did not make it out to Munich, but he did rather take one for the team and head out to Texas. Yeah! He went to Dallas, Texas, actually, and went to the Lone Star Audio Fest. And he came back with this. Number five, Steven Slosso, Stereo Clarity, the best wings. Number four, Dave Thompson's Raven Audio. Best roommates who can play custom music tailored for dogs. Not kidding. It's a real thing. Google it. Number three, Greg Roberts, Volte Audio. The best barbecue in Dallas is probably in Austin. It's a lot of food. There's a lot of food theme here I think we got going.
Oh, yeah.
Number three, Norm Tracy's Audio Crafters Guild. The classiest room and even good when you're on drugs. Number one, Russ Gates, Blowtorch Audio Works. Sounds like he had a good time. Not the biggest show, but I think he had a lot of fun from what I gather.
Yeah, the Lone Star Show. I mean, the Lone Star Show is a different kind of format, right? You go to the Capital Audio Fest or even Expona back in the day, and you had, you know, 30, 40 rooms. You had locals showing up with their cool stuff, and it became an excuse to go party. And I think this is really the heart and soul of the whole high-end experience. It's that it should be shared. It should be fun. And the point about food is right on, right? I mean, what is more human than sitting down and breaking bread with a bunch of nerds you happen to share something with? And these audio shows are excuses to get out of your doldrums, out of your boring day, and go do something you really ought to be doing all along, which is enjoying something awesome. And I know Eric had a great time.
Scott, thank you so much for your help. Sure. It sounds like it was a wonderful season, really, wasn't it, for audio shows? A lot of great stuff. It's been a great track. And, you know, we're just getting going here, folks. We still have the show in Long Beach ahead of us, and then Rocky Mountain after that. And what a year it's been for shows. Fun stuff. Great sounding rooms. I always get so jazzed. I get jazzed for shows. I like it.
It's good times.
It's not just because they play Diana Krall constantly either.
It must be. So thank you so much for doing this, Brian. I really appreciate the opportunity to get on and babble at you. The recommendation I have to make to anybody and everybody who hears us, go to a show. Just do it. If you haven't done it, you're missing out. There's really nothing like it. So, you know, put down the keyboard, move away from all of your audio forums and go experience in real time, in your real body, what this high-end hobby has to offer. Meet the people, talk to the folks, eat the crispy pork knuckle. You'll love it, right? It's a whole different scene when you engage the people and not just the music.
I couldn't agree more. If you get a chance, the difference between reading about high-end audio in the forums and going to one of these shows is so polar opposite. I could not agree more. Set down the keyboard, head out, go hang out with the people, connect with humans, connect with the music, and I think you'll have a good time. Just saying.
I agree.